Final hour here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, Brandon Bigsby. Kind of breaking down some of the NFL news that's going on around the league right now. I heard about Jacoby Myers just getting traded to the Jacksonville Jaguars for a fourth-round pick. That's actually a good spot for a guy like Jacoby Myers.
Yeah, right, Brian Thomas, who's been struggling with drops. They need all the help they can get. And, I mean, they're 5-3, so they're right in the thick of it in the playoff race. So any extra bodies that can catch, and Jacoby Myers isn't bad. So, that's a good pickup for them.
Yeah, especially kind of slotting in as that, I wouldn't say wide receiver one, but probably that flex wide receiver one for them. Going in more about around the league, I saw Marquez Valdez-Scantling sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers as
back with A-Rod.
Yeah,
back
I guess A-Rod. They're just trying to rekindle what they had in Green Bay. You know, that's one thing I've recognized about Rodgers, even when he was with the Jets. You grab a guy like Alan Lazard that was with you in Green Bay, and now you're grabbing Marquez Valdez-Scantling with you. I mean, sure, Scantling's had a few other spots he's played at before going to Rodgers in Pittsburgh this year, but again, is the well running dry a little bit for Rodgers in Pittsburgh?
In terms of who he has to throw to?
Yeah.
I'd say so. I mean, they've been looking for a wide receiver. Pittsburgh was interested in Jacoby Myers. So they have DK Metcalf, they have Roman Wilson, who they still believe in Roman Wilson, but they still need another body. Pat Freiermuth has been catching passes for them.
Jonnu.
Jonnu hasn't been as involved as I thought he would be. And then Darnell Washington, their big tight end, who they use mostly to block. But, yeah, they definitely need another pass catcher, and I think that would help them win the AFC North.
Yeah, for sure. And we were talking before the break about Draymond Jones's, stipulations for the Titans' conditional fifth-round pick. I guess just needs two sacks, and on top of that, Ravens to make the playoffs, according to what Albert Breer has put out on his Twitter. So that's interesting. It says at least two sacks over the rest of the season. So at least two. I wonder what happens if he gets four or more. I mean, it has nothing to do with the draft pick, but
just get two.
Yeah,
just get two. And Ravens make the playoff, and then the Titans get a fourth round pick.
Happy as a clam. But getting to more of your calls and texts on the text line. Talking about the Titans and so forth, one person asked about earlier when we were talking about the Titans in the first hour, would like to see, talking about our question of the day sort of in a roundabout way of like what you want to see traded, don't want to see traded, says, I would like to see Amy Adams Strunk traded for owner to be named later. I could see not that happening, but I love the fictional idea of that. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, we can entertain ourselves. Hypotheticals, right? You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
I think we all want her to sell the team, so why not? Why not entertain the thought?
Yeah,
speak it into existence.
Dustin in Hopkinsville alluded to your point about wideouts for Pittsburgh, saying Metcalf has been a disappointment for Rodgers. I don't know. I'd say he's been on par. Wouldn't you say? I'd say he's been on par. The times where Rodgers needs someone to throw to, I think he's been a touchdown, resource for Rodgers in
Yak.
Some aspects.
Yak. Lots of yards after catch. Now, is it DK's best season? No, but he's still solid, pretty solid for them. They definitely need help, though. They definitely need to go get a receiver that's on the market. I don't know all the free agent or not free agent. I don't know who all the wide receivers are that are considering being traded.
Yeah.
I know Jacoby Myers was the big one.
And it was a fourth and a sixth-round pick.
Yeah.
So they got two picks out of that, not just one.
I think the Tennessee Titans might know somebody.
Is that Calvin Ridley? Is that what you're alluding
yes.
to?
Yes.
Calvin Ridley, huh?
Yeah, I don't know about that one quite yet. Let's
if you get a fourth-round pick for Calvin Ridley, I'd take that.
You'd be all right with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd be okay with a fourth. It's fringing it, but looking at some
trade him, trade him now while the value's high.
Yeah, it looks like here Josina Anderson saying the Giants are looking to trade right tackle Evan Neal before the deadline today. So that's another one to look at.
No,
not for the Titans.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying that's another trade option around the league. Excuse me. I should have reiterated that. The current wideouts right now for the Jacksonville Jaguars after the Jacoby Myers trade, Brian Thomas, who's struggling and is questionable, Jacoby Myers, Travis Hunter, who's currently injured, De'Ami Brown, Parker Washington, and Tim Patrick. That a good trade for them, obviously, but you wonder how that affects the Titans when they go play them again, you know, like played him once, going to play him again at some point, right?
Yeah, no, that's just another body to guard. And I think by the time the Titans play the Jaguars, Travis Hunter should be off the IR because I think either Jeremy Fowler or Ian Rappaport, one of these guys, posted that they expect to have him back after his IR window is done. So he only has to miss four games. So he has three more games to go. And by that point, I think he'll be back.
Yeah. Again, obviously today is the trade deadline. Call or text 615-737-1025. We'll answer your calls and texts about the Titans. But looking at some other options, and Robbie Rushford, it's kind of grabbed a little attention throughout other shows on this station, but Chika Conquo, obviously, you mentioned earlier Michael Mayer is somebody that the Packers are looking at. But what about a guy like Chika Conquo that could fit into a Packers system and or somewhere else in like Minnesota or something like that?
I think the way Matt LaFleur uses his tight ends, I think Chika Conquo could be a good option, a good pass catcher, because they already have a good good blocking tight end in Luke Musgrave. So if you're able to get – and that's my problem with Chika Conquo. I don't think he is some elite tight end. I don't even think he's very good, but he's athletic, and he's not a good blocker. But the Titans, there are still ways to use a guy like that, even if he's not the best. He's athletic, and you use that. You adapt your offense to your players, and you don't force them to fit in your mold. So there are still ways to use Chika Conquo. There are ways to use Gunnar Helm, and the Titans haven't figured that out. I think the Packers would be a good option because you have a good pass blocker and Musgrave. You get Chika Conquo for another target that, you know, replaces Tucker Kraft, at least until he comes back from injury. I think it's a season ending, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he tore the ACL, yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's a good option.
What about the Denver Broncos? For me, that's a team that sticks out for a guy like Chika Conquo because they're 7-2. They're leading their division. Why not add and bolster your lineup? Right now you have Evan Engram. I get it. But, again, Evan Engram's been in the league for, what, 9 seasons now? I mean, you're looking at a guy like Chika Conquo who has some legs under him where, hey, maybe we go grab a guy like that, and he develops under Sean Payton. That's obviously a pass-first team. I mean, this team is really good under Bo Nix, surprisingly. I mean, I wasn't as high on Bo Nix as a lot of people, but seeing him produce, I mean, it's the head coach and quarterback system that really bodes well for him. But it's another system I'd like to see Chika Conquo in. I mean, I'm not saying that I want him gone, but if the Titans are trying to move off of another player, that might be the option.
Yeah, I don't know if I mean, it would be hard for me to see Chika Conquo. I don't think he'd have a lot of production over there because Evan Engram has 215 receiving yards this year in 9 games. So it's not like he's getting a boatload of production either. So they don't use their tight ends much to begin with. So I think that would just be an extra body type deal, and I don't think they'd be willing to give up a pick for that.
Hear me out. If I'm a team that's 7-2 leading my division and say sometimes Evan Engram's, say my knee's all bummed out, maybe can't really service the way he used to in a roundabout way, look at a younger guy. That's just me. I don't know. I'm trying to look on the glass half full in some aspects.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at other potential options. I think I really like the Packers idea because, I mean, your best tight end, Tucker Kraft, out for the year. The Eagles seem to be acquiring everybody. Didn't Dallas Goedert, or am I making this up? Did Dallas Goedert have an injury? No, I may be making that up. I may have had
maybe last year. Not that I can recall. No, Dallas Goedert is good to go.
Yeah.
Their backup is Grant Calcaterra, so I mean that's not the best backup tight end. I mean, he only has 4 receptions on the season, but again, this team is normally run first with Saquon Barkley, who has struggled as of late.
I like the Packers.
Yeah.
As I go through all the teams.
Packers is your yeah. landing spot. Yep. There's got to be somebody else besides the Packers to me. I mean, maybe you look at a team like Carolina or the Bucs. Maybe the Bucs are an option because Chris Godwin, not the same Chris Godwin. Mike Evans is still out. They have Emeka Buka out wide. And then you still have Cade Otton as your safety blanket at tight end. But if you have 2 dual threat tight ends on your roster, I think that can kind of change the game. And plus, that's a division where the Bucs can easily carry it away in the NFC South.
Yeah, and I mean, they've had so many injuries to their receiver room already. If the receiver situation gets any worse for Tampa, I could see that. But as I go through all of this and I think about the tight end room, I mean, the Packers does make the most sense.
Yeah, hey, Weston Herbridge has a good question. And you know what? Let's save it for the next segment because I feel like this will stir a lot of Titans fans up in an absolute spiral. So more right here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, Brennan Bigsby. Phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Answering your calls and texts regarding the Titans and the current trade deadline that is looming towards the end of the day today. Will the Titans make another move? That is the big question of the day. Does it seem like it to me? Again, probably not, but there's always that small possibility. If the right phone call comes across those phone lines and says, hey, we want a third for XYZ player, and then you just say, sold. Where's the dotted line? Stuff
where
like that.
Where do I sign?
Where do I sign?
I'll drive the player to wherever the location is.
I'll get them their lunchbox set up, backpack everything, and put them on the first flight out to wherever
you want. I'll be like my mom, what she used to do for me in elementary school. I'll pack the lunch, drive you to school, drive you wherever you need to be.
Yeah.
For a third round of pick? Absolutely.
Absolutely. But, this is just it's an odd situation the Titans are in. I'm curious to hear what Titans fans have to say when it comes to this fan base in general, because there's some of them that continue to show up to games time and time again, and they look at it as like personal punishment. This is my personal punishment for a Sunday, is to go watch the Titans play football. And to some degree, like, why do you want to do that? You're hurting your mental headspace. For me, I'll watch them because, I mean, that's what we do. We watch football and we talk about it. But if I didn't really have to, per se, I would do something else easily do something else.
I understand why the national people don't watch the Titans. Makes perfect sense to me. It's my most toxic trait, is watching the Tennessee Titans lose every Sunday.
Yeah. We have some stuff I was teasing about earlier. Weston Hermitage talked about, hey, I have a real question, guys. Will we see A.J. Brown putting on the red, white, and navy today? I'm extremely hopeful for this. Love seeing Vrabel succeed, since apparently everybody here thinks he isn't, air quotes, a good coach. Again, that it honestly feels like I could see that happening, not today, but maybe in the offseason or something like that. The Eagles, obviously, they said, no, we don't want to move off of A.J. Brown, even though there's been some animosity between the two, the front office and the player itself. That's something to look at. That is a good text there, Wes. I'm intrigued to see how that plays out, because it's kind of like when, you know, Vrabel went up there for his jacket ceremony and said, it's not like this anywhere else. It's almost like that right now when it comes to guys like A.J. Brown. It's imminent. It's just a matter of time when that does happen. So, good text there, Wes. What do you think about that, Parker?
If Vrabel gets his opportunity to get A.J. Brown, he's absolutely going to do it, because he goes to bat for his guys. He got Harold Landry, got Jack Gibbons, got a bunch of the Titans coaching staff and brought them up to New England. So, if he gets the chance, he's absolutely going to do it. Now, the problem is, I don't think Howie Roseman's going to want to do that, because he has been going out. He got Jair Alexander. He got Jalen Phillips yesterday. He got another corner earlier last week. Three trades in the last week for the Eagles. They're trying to get another Super Bowl, and they're making it very, very clear. So I don't think it would be wise for the Eagles to do that. But if Mike Vrabel gets the opportunity, you best believe he's going to do it.
Yeah, and also with the Eagles too, like, even if A.J. Brown doesn't get the same amount of targets he's been receiving in years past, teams still have to game plan for him. And that's a factor of the game that – Howie Roseman knows, like, you got to keep a guy like A.J. Brown, who is a perennial wide receiver, even if we don't throw to him, and the game plan is to run it 25 times with Saquon Barkley up the middle, and it's going to get us stuff, you know, points, then we're going to do it. If we're going to have to push four or five times to win a football game, we're going to do it. Like, it's definitely a run mentality team. So, unfortunately, yeah, to that point, you make a great text, though, Wes. That is a good text.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that's why the Eagles, despite how good they are, they're number one in the NFC, but they're getting so much – their offensive coordinator, Kevin Petullo, is getting so much heat because he hasn't figured out how to balance, because they either run the ball 30 times with Saquon Barkley and neglect their superstar wide receivers in Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, or they throw it to those guys a bunch, but then they forget how to run the football. There's no balance. So that's why he's been under so much fire. I don't know. I think A.J. Brown stays.
Yeah, for sure he'll stay this year. I think it's more of an off-season move for sure. I just you make a great point there about the Philadelphia offense is so not there. The balancing of run game, pass game is just not there. And I think it was 3 weeks ago when A.J. Brown was, I wouldn't say throwing a fit, but was perturbed that he wasn't getting targets. That following
and then you
day,
start to see him post Bible verses on his Twitter.
Yeah.
That's how you know something's wrong.
Right. That following day, I think it was on a Saturday or Friday when he tweeted stuff about that. and the news got out about it. Sunday came around. I think he had a touchdown and like 60 yards receiving. Like, it was a crazy game for him. So, again, appreciate the text there, Wes. Dylan also says for Chig's case, we were talking earlier, Chig to the Seahawks. I get that. I mentioned that a few days ago, but I don't think that would really work, primarily because they just drafted Elijah Arroyo. They got A.J. Barner up there, and we all know who's getting the targets. It's Jaxon Smith-Njigba.
So. Yeah, did you see how they played the other night, too? A.J. Barner and Elijah Arroyo?
Yeah.
That's not happening.
No, especially after Elijah Arroyo's touchdown. Merrill and Mount Juliet, oh boy, long one, but definitely should read. Amy doesn't make all the decisions for the team. She has family members and other people that are a part of the ownership. They are all here. They are all in her ear trying to get her involved. She may be controlling owner, but for the other folks are pulling strings when and whenever they can. Her not wanting to pay the players that should have been paid and paying players that are not worth it, trying to fix her mistakes, is starting to downfall the mess. Absolutely correct. 100%. She is definitely paid the wrong people, especially paid the wrong players. Should have paid AJ Brown way back in the day. Titans fans will never let that one go down. This is just a dysfunctional franchise, unfortunately. We've come to the poverty level of football in the Nashville area. This is a poverty franchise.
This
I hate to say
rock bottom feels like.
This is exactly what rock bottom feels like. I hate to say it, but this is a poverty franchise. More on the text line we have here. It's 4872 says, trade Amy. can't do that, unfortunately. Love the.
Could I get Tress Leches in return? Because I'll absolutely do that.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned Tress Leches yesterday, yeah. Justin in Greenbrier says, interesting question for discussion. Why did Vrabel fall off so far if he is really that great of a coach? They lost every game the rest of the season, even though they had a decent team with Tannehill and Henry still on the team. It's a great question. I think it solely came down to the buy-in a little bit. I mean, I have to go back and look at the injury reports and stuff, but like, weren't they injury-riddled the rest of that season for the most part?
Well, yeah, there were some injuries, but it also took away your best element in the passing game, so that put a lot of pressure on the run game. And I remember saying, as Mike Vrabel was finishing up his time in Nashville, that the Titans have to be able to modernize their offense or else they're going to get left behind. You can't just run the you know, ground and pound the whole time, because the NFL is adapting. It's changing a little bit, so the Titans have to do that as well. We see that the coaches that don't adapt to the new way of college football in the current era, they fall behind, Dabo Swinney being example number one. So I was saying that the Titans had to adapt to that, and trading A.J. Brown does not help that philosophy. And plus, you look at John Robinson's last couple of drafts, they didn't have the horses either. They right. had those pieces. Derrick Henry was great, and Ryan Tannehill was great while he was here. But outside of that, there wasn't much.
Yeah, you're right. I think also to the texture's point, Justin's point of just like what kind of went wrong at the end, we all got to remember there was a bit of a friction between front office and Mike Vrabel.
100%.
Because
100%.
Vrabel wanted more say than I did say Rand Carthon in a roundabout way. I mean, that there's no collective there. You can't – like I think Rand said we all hunt together or whatever that is, but that was with Brian Callahan. You still couldn't do that with Mike Vrabel.
No.
So again,
I don't think the players had any buy-in issues with Vrabel, because everyone loves Vrabel. They love playing for him. He's a player's coach.
Yeah.
Now, if they were starting to doubt the front office, I could totally see that.
Yeah. There are times where I'll just go back and think in my head, what if Amy would have given Mike all the power just to run this team? I don't know if that would have really worked out well or not, but it's working well in New England. But that's the system that they've been running under Bill Belichick for the longest time. It just works that way. So,
and it helps. Drake May is playing MVP caliber. Josh McDaniels, really good OC. Not a great head coach, really good OC. And we see that the pieces they brought in defensively has helped them, because they went out and they got a ton of good free agents, and it's really helped them. So they probably need a little bit of help at pass catcher too now with Kayshon Boutte. The injury he has, but at least they still have Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, you mentioned Stephon Diggs. That's, to me, I'm not sold on a guy like Stephon Diggs. Sure, he does contribute, but he's not your perennial pass catcher like he used to be. He's catching your 5-yard outs and, you know, your drag routes and stuff like that. Those little shorter routes, not over the top. He doesn't have that breakaway speed anymore.
Yeah, and tight ends.
Hunter Henry,
and they have somebody else. Yeah, and Austin Hooper. Yeah.
So
another guy that was in Tennessee when Vrabel was here.
Exactly. And this past Sunday, give credit where credit's due. DeMario Douglas had a pretty darn good game. I mean, that's a guy that scored a touchdown, and this Patriots offense knows how to really spread the ball out in different ways. I mean, Travion Henderson and Ramondre Stevenson, both are running backs there, but they each has their problems.
Travion needs more carries, man.
Yeah.
Travion Henderson needs way more carries.
The pass blocking for him is not really helping him out much. So, yeah, give him the ball a little bit more. Again, we're going to get to your calls and texts throughout the rest of the show. 615-737-1025. More coming up right here on Next Man Up.
Like a cop car.
All right, Parker Kelly with the pipes. Okay. Getting to more of NFL trade deadline stuff regarding the Titans and how that can affect them going forward. We'll also talk about a little bit of some college basketball that obviously yesterday was opening day of college basketball around, I guess you could say, the globe, because Vanderbilt Women's was in Paris.
Yeah, they were in Paris. So, yeah, we're worldwide around here.
There was already an upset, I think, last night. I think it was Hawaii lost to – it was one of those West Coast games. It was like 79-78.
Were you up watching?
No. I saw it on SportsCenter this morning.
Okay, I got you.
I turned on the TV, and I was like, oh, college basketball.
Nick Frazier, diehard college basketball fan over here.
Look, as much as I love college basketball, I'm not as dialed in as a lot of people would like to be dialed in. Just – I don't know. My interests are more on NRL, you know, all the
soccer to worry about. They're in the middle of the playoffs
baseball,
right now.
Yeah, like NRL finished for me. My team, Brisbane Broncos, won the NRL championship premiership.
Okay, congratulations,
thank you,
sir.
Luke Littler, the darts are starting to roll back up.
Darts is coming back?
Yep, it's coming back.
They're getting out of the preseason, right? They're getting the arms warmed up?
Yep, the World Grand Prix. So they had that going on. Yeah, I mean, college basketball, I love watching Mississippi State basketball over, you know, obviously I've been to the hump a few times, but I try to get as invested. I'm more invested when it comes towards March Madness and the conference championship tournaments. Those things interest me a little bit more. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to discredit the season. I enjoy watching college basketball, but I'm not following it religiously like a guy like Connor Newt, who is a Kentucky diehard. I mean, that guy
is a Kentucky diehard right there.
Lives and breathes Kentucky basketball, and good for him. I enjoy that.
We were talking about this before we got on the air, but college basketball, it really is fun, especially when March Madness rolls around, but it gets so overshadowed because football season is here, and that's, you know, what America cares most about. So you have college basketball, as I punched the mic there. Excuse
just pulling
me,
a Joe
I'm
Rex
sorry.
Road,
I'm
man.
Sorry. But college football is going to wrap up January 19th, the Super Bowl will go until about mid-February, and then by that point in the college basketball season, you have about 3 weeks left until March Madness starts. So that's when people really start to get dialed in, unless you're a diehard, you know? So I feel like it gets overshadowed, which I hate because I also love college basketball.
Yeah, and we're kind of seeing the second wave of, like, players, too. I think Carmelo Anthony's son plays for Syracuse now, and Shaquille O'Neal's son plays for, like, I think, like, Sacramento State.
Where's
and
pizza?
Joe Dubin walking in the studio asking for his pizza.
Of course, Big Joe's wondering where his pizza is.
I'll explain later, man.
While we're in the middle of a segment, nonetheless. That is typical. Typical Big Joe.
It's all good.
You know, I was in here on Sunday, and I was watching the Titans game. I was watching the Bears and Bengals game, which was fantastic. And then I had Red Zone on another TV, so I was three-screen split. Big Joe was here the entire time. The entire time I was here. And he was just in here, locked himself in, had the Titans game. To be honest, I don't even know if he was watching the Titans game, because I know Big Joe's checked out by now. But it was hilarious. He was in here for like 6 hours.
Hey. Guy enjoys being around Parker Kelly.
I guess so. I don't know if I have that effect on people. Brandon and Nick, you'll have to let me know. But I don't know. He was in here the whole time.
They could hear Joe. He was asking about pizza. Kind of promised me yesterday for pizza. I looked at the dough. It was not edible.
For those that can't see, he came in here while you were talking and asked for your pizza. And you're like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's okay. I'll get him some pizza later on this week.
And he didn't care.
Fresh dough.
He did not care.
He's dialed in. He's hungry. He's a hungry guy. Yeah, I don't blame him.
Don't mess with his food.
No. But we were talking about college basketball, and just there are a few, I guess, former NBA superstars that their kids are now playing in college sports too, which is kind of intriguing. So it kind of maybe gives me another reason why to watch, you know, college basketball. Tennessee kind of off to a not as impressive start for you, huh?
I watched most of the game, and no, it was not an impressive win, but I really don't put too much stock in it because it's really early, and you brought in a bunch of transfers, have a lot of freshmen playing, so gonna have to have them all gel. But and Tennessee does not have a tough non-conference schedule whatsoever, so they have plenty of time to figure it out.
Yeah,
that's what I want to know in the live chat, and if we get some callers, when do you guys really start paying attention to college basketball? Because for me, I kind of try to balance both. Obviously, college football is going to be my main focus, but I try to pay attention as much as I can. Like, I watched Tennessee yesterday. I tuned into a little bit of the Florida-Arizona game. Florida actually lost yesterday.
I did not know that.
The number three team in the country lost. The defending national champs lost to Arizona. Arizona has a true freshman by the name of Koa Pete, who had a 30-point performance yesterday.
Yeah, 7 rebounds. Yep, three
so
steals.
This may be the year in college basketball where we see a lot of true freshmen. Cameron Boozer at Duke put up 24-23 on Tennessee in an exhibition, which I did watch. Wow. So, yeah.
Now, what about Auburn for you? Like, obviously, Bruce Pearl no longer coached. I believe his son took over. Just that whole scenario. They didn't win by much yesterday. I don't think we're going to see much of improvement from that team going forward.
Yeah, no, Auburn's going to be a case study because – Bruce Pearl did this strategically the time of year in which he left, because there were only about, I think it was a month left until the season started, and that's not enough time to go run a national coaching search and go hire a new guy. He did that on purpose so that his son could take over. Now, the good thing about Auburn is he didn't leave the cupboard bare. There's still a lot of talented players. I think they'll be in the mix, but you're talking about an SEC conference that is a meat grinder. I mean, 14 teams got in the tournament last year, so I see that being pretty similar in the way it plays out this year. But, yeah, no, Auburn's going to be an interesting case study.
Yeah, I mean, they went to overtime last night with Bethune-Cookman.
That's not good. On paper, that's not. Yeah. I didn't watch the game, but, yeah, on paper, that does not look good.
I'm just checking out the box score. I mean, only winning by 5 points, 95-90. It's just you fell off a little bit in the second half. It was back and forth.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Overall, it looks like a pretty good slate of college games today, that is. I mean, you got number one Purdue taking on Evansville. Any Indiana team for me is just could go anyway because it's basketball country. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, man.
Indiana's basketball country.
Right. My dad grew up in Indiana, so he's always telling me stories about the high school basketball games he'd play in and how crazy it would get over there. Purdue's really good. Purdue may have the player of the year, so and Braden Smith. So Indiana, I'm interested to see how they do with their new coach. Darian DeVries brought his son Tucker over from West Virginia. Mm. So I think they'll be pretty good. But Indiana basketball in general, Butler, I mean, like all those teams. Butler's been pretty solid historically, but
right.
No, Indiana's fun.
Yeah, I mean, tonight at 7:45 on ESPN, you have Texas versus Duke and the Dick Vitale Invitational. A number six team in Duke, coming back with John Shire as the head coach. I think you would think that after Coach K left, there'd be a little bit of a drop-off. But in a guy like John Shire, who's been a part of that program as a player and coming in as a coach the last couple of seasons, he's adapted well to that new era of like NIL and getting that whole entire roster system down. And credit to Duke and for making that transition with him. But overall, that to me, that's a team to watch out for in the ACC that could just, I wouldn't say take the cake, but probably could.
Dude, this is going to be a tough night for me because I'm playing, I have Church League volleyball tonight, Sand League volleyball, and that ends around 6:30 or so. But think about what I'm going to have to multi-screen some stuff tonight because we got the CFP ranking show at 7, mm-hmm. the first one, which I will be dialed in for that. And then we have Texas and Duke. What time did they play? You said 7:30?
7:45.
Okay, 7:45. And then This is really important because Dancing with the Stars is on tonight at 7, and my wife mandates that I watch that with her, which I'm not opposed because Dancing with the Stars is entertaining, but I may have to pull out the multi-screen tonight.
I think
it's going to be a loaded Tuesday night for your boy over here.
Yeah, you may have to do that, man. You can't miss it, Dancing with the Stars.
Dude, it's heating up, dude.
Isn't there fantasy like sports for Dancing with the Stars?
I hope not. That would just be sicko. I hope not. I'm sure there are some people out there that do it. I know people do it with American Idol.
That's right. Yeah. Now, I've seen some people do like Dancing with the Stars, like watch parties and stuff at beyond the point. But no, looking back at more of this college basketball slate tonight, not a lot of games, but still a good slate because people always love to watch Kentucky play. I think under what, year two of Mark Pope as Hope with Pope? Is that what they say, right?
Something. So we may have to check with Connor on that one. I think that's what they say.
Yeah, they take on Nichols tonight. So this is one of those games.
Hope with Pope.
It's those cupcake games where you can kind of see what they really have, and it'll be like probably 109 to 52, something like that. Texas Tech's another team that's in the Big 12 that always surprises people every year. It's always like Oklahoma State, Baylor, Texas Tech, and Houston. Houston's not technically with them, but those are teams that are always – in the realm of possibility of upsetting teams and being good throughout the year.
Yeah, I think Texas Tech is going to be good under Grant McCaslin. St. John's, I think, is going to be really good with Rick Pitino. UConn got some really good transfers, so I see them being in the national championship mix as well. I think Houston, of course, will be there up with Purdue. The team that I think they're getting a lot of talk just because of who their coach is, Will Wade. I mean, you remember him at LSU.
Yeah.
And he's back. He's back in the Power Four. He's got some really good transfers. I think NC State is going to be represented here in the top 25. They're 26, according to the AP poll. They have the most votes on the outside at 101. So they're right there at 26.
Wow.
I think they will be talked about too, especially if Auburn falls out after their result of last night. So we'll see.
I'm intrigued how the top 25 will play out because, you know, you have your preseason darlings, and I guess you could include Auburn in the mix of all this. Do you think Florida ends up dropping off a little bit? I mean, obviously they're lost to Arizona, 93-87, but do you think they kind of catch some stride going forward or no?
I mean, I do. I think they have one of the better front courts in college basketball, but they just lost last night. So it's kind of hard to say. I'm sure they'll probably lose a step. Like, I don't think they'll win the national championship. I mean, they may. Just because you lose the first game of the season to another ranked team doesn't mean you're dead. But I personally don't think – because it's hard to go back-to-back in anything unless you're Oklahoma softball and you just rattle off five in a row. But
right.
It could happen, but I don't think it will.
Yeah, I just – going into the month of December, they have number 6 Duke, number 4 UConn back-to-back. I just feel like when you hit that part of the schedule, sure, they have a few games in between them that it's with TCU, Miami, Florida State. Those are some tough games here and there. But when you start getting to the meat and potatoes of your top 10s, your top 5s in your schedule, like I think when we get to conference play for SEC basketball, that's when you're really going to see – you know, a lot of these perennial top 15 teams eat each other alive when it comes to, you know, figuring things out when it comes to conference championships.
Just like it did last year. And you brought up Auburn. Well, Auburn has to play, and this is just in the non-conference, they have to play Houston, they have to play Oregon, they have to play number 7 Michigan, they have to play NC State, and then they're at Arizona and Purdue. And that's all before SEC play starts. And you know how toxic SEC play could be. So,
yeah.
That is not an easy road for a first-time head coach.
Holy cow. Yeah. Well, I guess we got our college basketball talking a little earlier than we thought. But
had to just toss it in there. It deserves a segment, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll wrap things up talking a little bit about NFL, college basketball, college football. Again, back to your phone lines and text lines right here on 615-737-1025. More coming up on Next Man Up, 1025 The Game. Back here on Next Man Up, 1025 The Game, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, Brandon Bigsby. Holy cow, as I said during the break.
Oh, my gosh.
Parker Kelly dropped his phone, and I'm in awe a little bit. Sauce Gardner headed to the Indianapolis Colts.
Oh, boy. Oh, brother. So, just when the AFC South didn't need to get any more difficult for the Titans, it does.
Look, gosh, I'll just say this. If Titans are not going to be great, and it's going to be the Indianapolis Colts that are going to be the top team in the AFC South. This is a great pickup for them because they've figured out what they need and what they don't need. I think after the game versus Pittsburgh, they've understood that they need a little extra help out there. And sure enough, they go grab one of the best cornerbacks in all of pro football, essentially.
I just can't believe this. That is the last thing I thought I'd see when I opened my phone. And it came straight from Ian Rappaport that the Jets are trading Sauce Gardner to the Colts. The Colts do need corner help, but they got Sauce Gardner, one of the best young guys in the game?
I don't know what the compensation is for it, but hopefully it comes out here pretty soon.
Oh, no. This is not good for Titans.
What do you think the rationale is for the Jets? Because, I mean, you look at Sauce Gardner. I mean, he's, what, year three, four? He's an all-pro level guy. He has the pedigree to be a consistent franchise piece for a team that needs all the talent they can get.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely is every bit of what – I mean, he's just as advertised. That's the best way to describe it. I mean, this is great for the Indianapolis Colts. You're getting your perennial cornerback. I mean, I don't know how to tell you that this is their division now. They have said, you know what, the Jags may have traded for Jacoby Myers. Yeah, we're going to step up one more.
Pack it up. This is the Colts division. Pack it up.
Yeah, so that's pretty crazy. So going into the rest of the show, looking at more NFL trade deadline news, it looks like the Bears are actively trying to acquire a pass rusher. It looks like after their game versus Cincinnati, they've recognized they need a little extra help getting to the quarterback because allowing Joe Flacco to throw for, what, 400-plus yards on him in a game that went back and forth in the fourth quarter, it was, what, 47-42 to end the game? I mean, that's just crazy. So the fact that the Bears are still trying to add more depth to their defensive side of the ball, but I just can't get over the Colts trading for Sauce Gardner, according
to
Ian Rappaport.
Two first-round picks.
Oh, okay.
Two first-round picks for Sauce Gardner.
Holy cow.
So we're obviously – not going to – hold on. I can't believe this. I'm sorry. We're not going to know who won the trade. We gotta find out in a few years. But on the outside, I mean, this is huge for the Colts. From a 50,000-point view, this is huge from the Colts. But you get two first-round picks. The rationale, if you think about it, for the Jets is they're right there with the Titans in terms of how bad the roster, how bad the team is. You need all the help they can get, but you trade one of your younger guys who you just gave an extension to.
Yeah.
So that part I don't understand.
Well, then you're offloading the money. That's essentially what they're doing. Yeah. They're offloading the money, gosh, which is good. But then now, look, like you said, they're in the same situation as the Titans, but now they have an upper edge against the Titans because they have two first-round picks. They can keep their first-round pick they have this year and say that first-round pick the Colts gave them, those two of them, maybe it's for next year or this year, whatever it may be. But then you could use that as ammunition to offload and build for the future. A trade back out of those picks and acquire other picks on top of that. So maybe the Jets, even though they are a poorly run franchise just like the Titans, they can figure things out. But that is a blockbuster trade if I've ever seen one. Sauce Gardner to the Indianapolis Colts. Colts obviously in the AFC South, so that's something to keep your eyes and ears on for the rest of the season. So
I wonder what this means for the Titans, because now that the Colts have two first-round picks, now I'm not exactly sure when they are, if they're 2026, 2027, how that's split up. But I wonder what this means for the Titans, because you see a divisional opponent have that many picks early. Do the Titans then, if they have the high pick like we all think that they will, do they trade and try to get two first-round picks? This is all interesting things to think about.
Yeah, I mean, for sure having, let's say if they end up with a top three pick this upcoming draft, you would for sure want to trade that back and acquire more draft capital. And again, you try to trade back for the draft capital in 27 and 26. So if I'm looking at it, you want to get, I'd say, some day two, day three picks from that first round pick on in the 26 draft and make sure you get your day one picks in the 27 draft. Wouldn't that pretty fair to say?
Yeah. Rashid Shaheed traded also.
Really?
I don't know where to exactly.
Seattle.
Oh, the Seattle Seahawks, yep.
That's
back
a good
with OC Clint Kubiak, who was with him in New Orleans.
That's a great pickup. I mean, he is a great returner. That's a guy that really helped out the Saints. And, again, that's another team, the Saints, that are kind of tearing things down to the bare bones of it all, trying to rebuild stuff. I mean, you go and draft a guy like Tyler Shough and as a quarterback, then you have Spencer Rattler that – ends up starting the season, and then you go back to Tyler to the last two weekends as the quarterback. So it looks like the Saints are still struggling to figure out their identity going forward, but they're on the step in the right direction, trading Rashid Shaheed. So that's a really good punt returner, kick returner.
And another speed threat for the Seahawks, who kind of need that. Need that speed threat. They have Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who's not the fastest, and Cooper Kupp has been out. So that just provides another option for them at receiver.
Yeah, it gives them that slot option for sure. He's kind of like the Mecole Hardman of the Seattle Seahawks now in that offense, where he can do a lot of those gadget plays, those jet sweeps, so forth. So good for them. I mean, that's a good little look for the Seattle Seahawks, a team that's clicking on all cylinders that could win their division as well. So it's probably them and the Rams, if I'm not mistaken. Both those teams, same record. Rams been a little quiet with the trade deadline. I'm kind of surprised. I thought they would make a few moves here and there, but nothing yet.
Yeah, the Rams to me are dark horse Super Bowl contenders. I think they have everything they need, but Puka Nacua just had an injury. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you. That would make sense for them to go out and get a receiver like Shaheed to kind of be a bridge until you get Puka Nacua back.
Also, too, in that division, you look at the San Francisco 49ers, another team that, you know, not making many moves at the deadline, and that kind of tells me something. It tells me that window that they have with Brock Purdy, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, you know, all their defensive players, to me that shows the window's closing and that their Super Bowl window is – no longer there. They're going to play out those contracts. And if somebody's asking, you know, for one of their players as a Super Bowl contender, yeah, trade them off. But as for right now, I don't think the 49ers are looking at anything because of, you know, their situation.
Yeah. The 49ers are interesting because they're a window team, but they've been playing really well. Mac Jones has been playing very, very well for them. I'm convinced Shanahan could pick you off the street, me off the street, Brandon off the street, and win a couple games.
Yeah.
He's a wizard.
He knows how to get the most out of each player he brings in. And kind of sticking to the NFC, looking at the Carolina Panthers, a team that's 5-4, are you surprised they're not going after anybody right now?
Yeah, no, I am. But the Panthers don't get a lot of national attention, but they're above 500, which has not been the case in a long, long time. And this is the second time this season they've been over 500. They were 4-3. They lost to the Bills, and then they won Sunday versus the Packers. They're 5-4, so they're not a bad football team.
Not at all. I mean, Rico Dowdle has really kind of helped them out in the run game for sure, getting that big win over the Packers 16-13, taking on the Falcons this upcoming weekend, and then, not this weekend, following weekend. They have the Saints this weekend, which is another – interesting game, because now that you get rid of Rashid Shaheed, you wonder what the Saints are going to rely on. Obviously, you still have Taysom Hill there, but there's nobody really else to go towards. I mean, he's just their utility guy.
Chris Olave.
That's right.
Who knows? I mean, trade deadline day is crazy, so he may get traded too. I don't know.
Look, if I'm the Saints and you have some form of a value, I think someone mentioned on the text line, you know, the Titans don't really have that two first-round type player on their team. For the Saints, that's kind of their guy, Chris Olave. If you can offload him, maybe get a first and something else. I don't know if he's worth two firsts, but if you can get a first and something else, it's definitely worth it.
Absolutely, absolutely. This trade deadline is nuts, man.
It's pretty crazy, and I'm sure it'll continue, and it will continue on these airwaves, because Chase and McJoe are coming up next right here on 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman will be back in studio tomorrow. Appreciate him allowing me to fill in last part of the week into this first half of the week. Appreciate Parker Kelly sitting in Monday and Tuesday for Tony Tuesday.
It's been so much fun. So much fun over the last couple of days. And I'll still be here tomorrow. Who knows? Jake may have a wild 24 hours coming over from Paris. What if he's not here on time? We may have to fill in for him again.
You never know. But, hey, there's more coming up on these airwaves right here on 102.5 The Game. Chase and McJoe coming up next.